Welcome to the Life Science Rundown. This is Nicholas Kapman with the FDA Group. Before we jump into our discussion today, just a little bit about the FDA Group. We help life science companies in the areas of quality assurance, regulatory affairs, clinical operations, commissioning, qualification, and validation, as well as manufacturing and engineering. We offer three engagement models, which are project-based, staff augmentation, and full-time employee recruitment. So if you ever find yourself in need, just head over to thefdagroup.com and check us out and get in touch. So today I am speaking with Ben Lockwin. So Ben, thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Nicholas. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So before maybe you introduce yourself, I know the focus of today's podcast is to talk about what is 2021 going to look like from an FDA perspective? And that could be vaccines, it could be the budget, it could be reviews, inspections, AI. But I know, as we're kind of climbing out of 2020, a lot of us are kind of wondering, what is FDA thinking? What can we expect in the year 2021? So that's going to be the focus. So why don't you just kind of give us an introduction, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I've been in the life science industry for a little over a quarter century now. And in that time, I've had lots of opportunities to work for medical device companies, for pharmaceutical, small molecule biologics companies, for vaccine development and on vaccine advisory panels. I think really when I try to encapsulate what, the last 20 plus years of my career has been, it's really in my mind focused on how I can help to bring good science to healthcare, to better healthcare. And, I think really help with the patient centricity now more than ever. As part of your introduction, just thinking about where we're at now, we largely couldn't have imagined we would be in this situation with the global pandemic and what it's done for everything economically and as far as people's ability to seek healthcare of any sort of nature. And it's been such a disruptor that, as I think in a circumspect way about where the industry's been and where it's going to, I think, this is a good conversation and jumping off point for us because, everything that we do, let's say you and I and everyone who's listening and viewing this podcast, it's probably, depending on the audience demographic, focused on how we can better prepare new therapies for the future, which obviously each come with regulatory burden and regulatory hurdles. And all of that is, largely in flux right now. There's been a halving of inspections conducted and planned as far as the FDA is concerned, and the EMA, the MHRA, various ministries of health around the world, they're not really any different in that regard. So I'll pause there and kind of let you jump into where you'd want to go next. But I would just say for everyone listening and viewing that, the paradigm shifts that we've been seeing as part of the pandemic are likely to occur. And, I think it's incumbent upon all of us to really have to treat the situation with a lot of patience and a lot of nimbleness and agility because there is a lot of ambiguity. And I think, as much as we delve into some of the forecasts for where things are likely to go, obviously nothing's a guarantee and there's always going to be these black swan sorts of events come up.
Yeah. Well, kind of the contrast that I'm seeing, and one of the things that's on the forefront of my mind is we've seen the number of domestic and foreign FDA inspections be cut in half. So that's one thing that we've seen. I had a conversation today and the person I'm speaking to was saying, do you think that they've created a backlog and they're gonna triple their effort? Or do you think they're just gonna turn the key back on and just kind of go back up to the normal pace? I don't know if you saw this, but actually there was something on LinkedIn yesterday where Elizabeth Warren, senator out of Massachusetts, was criticizing the FDA for not doing enough foreign inspections. And I personally was pretty blown away by that comment, because there's so much going on in the Congress with everything we're seeing, from coronavirus to the election to, you know, a myriad of things. And the fact that she felt it was important enough to bring that up, I thought was shocking. And I was just interesting, to say the least. And I was curious to kind of wonder, what is the impact of that comment? What is the, you know, what do you think FDA is thinking as they're entering 2021? You know, do you think that they are going to triple their efforts? Do you think they're going to just turn the key on? You know, and just to even make this conversation more complicated than it already is, we've seen a gigantic increase in the number of registrations and applications, from 510Ks to companies bringing on diagnostics and hand sanitizers, which is regulated as a drug. So why don't I just take that full plate and pass it over to you?
Yeah, okay. Good questions. So were you blown away in a positive way or a negative, pessimistic way by Elizabeth Warren's commentary?
It was neither. It was just, I was surprised that it garnered attention, right? That was really what was surprised, is that with everything that they're dealing with, she felt that it was important enough to bring it to the House, or Congress as a whole, and say, hey, this is unacceptable. So what the shocking part for me was that the level of importance that is gaining attention, right? And the last time I can remember the government, you know, the Congress being involved in something like this is when New England compounding happened, right? And then there was, you know, the whole rollout of what happened once that whole situation unfolded. So it just, I guess, if anything, it just kind of turned my attention up a bit and made me wonder more about what to expect for 2021.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease kind of mentality and situation going on there. So obviously Elizabeth Warren, you know, she doesn't just conceive of these ideas spontaneously out of the ether. So she's probably been having a lot of folks whisper to her in her ear that maybe the nexus of it is like the emergency use authorizations, the EUAs for materials, supplies, PPE sorts of supplies, as well as therapies, let's say in Asia Pacific, China specifically. And there were a lot of EUAs in the past 6 months that were also rescinded by the FDA. So it could be that those conversations have snowballed a bit internally to be something like, well, what are we going to do with foreign sites if we're not keeping an eye on them now, because we've gotten enough market signals that they're not able to capably produce reliably safe and high quality, whether it be diagnostic instruments or PPE supplies, medical supplies, etc. And so it could be that she's reacting to that. But I mean, I think definitely there's a lot to unpack there. I would say, to the question of, you know, is the FDA going to triple their efforts in, let's say, number of foreign inspections, or even frankly domestic inspections, because they're still going to have to occur in the States, a lot of what's tamped down the number of regulatory inspections, and again, this goes not only for FDA, but every international regulatory agency, is that there's a lot of travel restrictions. So it's very difficult to get into a lot of these foreign entities and not have to quarantine for 2 weeks in situ, which then makes something that would otherwise be a 2 to 5 day inspection, let's say, now it's got to be travel time plus 14 days plus 2 to 5 days. And so that really becomes unreasonably complex as far as forecasting, predicting, and planning how all of that travel and inspection would go. I think what we're probably gonna see, if I prognosticate, is that because all of the EU member states are now part of what's called the MRA, which is the Mutual Recognition Agreement, the idea there is that they can mutually accept respective GMP inspections and inspections of systems and reduce the number of foreign inspections. And obviously that works the other way too. So ex-US agencies don't necessarily have to come here with FDA participating in the MRA. So I think the only way we can reasonably get through this, well, there's kind of two ways. One is that the FDA just leaves the inspections undone and unmitigated, which could be a disaster for the industry, or there's going to have to be probably some sort of looking at the approach of the MRA again, the Mutual Recognition Agreement, and deciding how best to structure and orchestrate that so that all of the international regulatory bodies can share in these inspections together and then have some sort of mutually agreeable output. But because there's no infrastructure in place at the FDA to even recognize and process that sort of documentation, I think that's something that adds another 12 to 18 to 24 months worth of complexity and bureaucracy. So if we get all sorts of into the FDA, if we get all sorts of documentation coming from foreign regulatory bodies saying, we went to this country here, we went to this country here, here are our inspection reports and findings, these all get collated into some sort of global version of the Solidarity clinical trial. And then the regulatory bodies agree mutually and share the outputs of these so that they satisfy all of those inspections. That's going to require a tremendous amount of partnership and, frankly, trust that I'm not sure is yet fully in place and ready to be used.
Mm. What do you think the MRA, what kind of impact do you think that's going to have on companies as they prepare for 2021?
I think it's certainly going to change the landscape of how companies go about their preparation activities. You know, in the United States, let's talk specifically domestically, we have, you know, a lot of our favorites in terms of organizations who provide the sort of consulting that prepares companies for inspections. There are well-known conference bodies that hold annual and semi-annual conferences on these topics. And so in the past, it's been that all the companies were used to going to certain types of conferences, buying certain help from consulting and recruiting agencies, buying training content from education and training providers in this regard, as far as regulatory services and science is concerned. And I think probably what we'll start seeing is that there is a lot more that's unknown. So if we were to start sharing through the MRA inspections conducted by different bodies, it's very much more difficult to do that kind of preparation when now you maybe don't know who the team is that's coming in. You don't know who the reviewers or inspectors might be. You aren't maybe familiar with how a different regional inspection office conducts their inspection. So it becomes, I think, a lot harder to plan for it.
Mm-hmm. So do you think, considering the fact that it adds more complexity than already exists, what are some of the things you think companies can do to kind of put themselves in the best position possible?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think looking at something like what your company provides, Nicholas, a review of, and by the way, to the listeners and viewers, I'm not a paid spokesperson, but looking at a list of what the most common findings have been, where those findings are likely to lead in terms of the future and the next set of evolutions within the organization. So here's some specific concrete examples maybe the listeners can wrap their heads around and use. We've known for a long time that pharmaceutical quality systems, for example, So subparts within 21 CFR 211, or training of staff, or CAPA systems, root cause analysis. These are always at the top of the list, often in the US, but really worldwide, if you look at regulatory outputs from inspections. And I think really the smartest way to go about preparing is to understand that, you know, the history can, I think, give us good preparation as to what the future will bring. And so, you know, to not be agnostic to what findings used to be, because even though it may be different regulatory bodies, they go about the inspection different, they're still calibrated to how the way things used to be. And you know, even though the pandemic has changed a lot of how we live in this world, it doesn't change fundamentally how pharmaceutical or medical device manufacturing or testing needs to happen. So there are still going to be issues about the quality unit failed to do the following, dot, dot, dot. There was a lack of analytical testing conducted. There were issues with lack of root cause analysis. There were insufficient CAPA implemented for non-conformances and deviations. So those sorts of things will still continue to exist. So I would say leveraging that is fundamentally important. And then probably the next place most important is, you know, understanding where the regulators are coming from, and then trying to get regulatory trends and intelligence from that region in the world. Because again, there are going to be, you know, certain regional interests and sensibilities from the inspectorates, and you know, more data always beats better data or fewer data. So, you know, the more you can front end load the review of data, understanding who the inspectors and reviewers would be, the better off the inspection would be likely to go, because it should be nothing ever left to chance.
Yeah. Thing that popped in my mind is we saw with the start of the pandemic that there was a pretty significant problem as it pertains to outsourcing manufacturing overseas. Yeah. And in the immediate aftermath of the pandemic, I thought there was a strong likelihood that we would begin bringing our manufacturing back into the United States. But I know that there is a lot of circumstances and pressures to continue using manufacturing offshore in China and India. So how do you balance, and what do you think is going to happen when we learn about the problems of the pandemic? We look at the new incoming president and kind of his philosophies on partnerships with overseas companies. Do you think that it will remain the same? Do you think that we're going to start seeing more manufacturing in the United States? What do you think is going to happen?
I think in the United States, the incoming Joe Biden administration is very much more globally focused than the Trump administration. The Trump administration, Trump specifically, personally, himself said on many occasions, you know, that his policies were about not only, of course, make America great again, which was his tagline, but it was very much a nationalistic perspective, and to reduce the reliance on companies from China and elsewhere, frankly. And so I think with the incoming Biden administration, there not only will be a philosophy of greater utilization of foreign entities, but for those companies who are located outside of the US now, or whose manufacturing exists in part outside of the United States now, I think, you know, with two very viable vaccine candidates for COVID-19, not even on the horizon anymore. I mean, basically imminently to be used for frontline workers pending emergency use authorization. I think it will be relatively soon that when inspections start picking up companies are going to realize that they can continue to manage what they were doing, even though those companies are located remotely in foreign lands. And I think, you know, that's not such a bad thing. If the pandemic had no end in sight, no potential treatment or cure in sight, or preventive in this case with the vaccine, I think it would have been a situation where you would have to start wondering, you know, is this going to be more viable for us to bring manufacturing back onshore? Because if we don't, how are we going to get there? How are our regulatory agencies going to properly inspect, et cetera? But I think, you know, because this all kind of happened within one calendar year, and if you look at re-inspections taking place every 18 months, 24 months, the kind of the long wavelength of that curve as it moves through time is a bit more broad than at the moment the pandemic situation. So you can kind of fit, you know, almost two of these current pandemic situations that we've been in into almost one cycle of a regulatory approval and then the agencies having to come back and re-inspect the site. So if this were to delay and persist through much of 2021, I think that would be very much more of a conversation worth having and that people would get serious about. But right now, I think based on what the stock market is doing, a lot of investors and a lot of company executives are pretty optimistic that we are going to be able to get a handle on travel and commerce and the economy relatively soon. Whether or not that's the case, at least the optimism is there. And so I think the plan is to still take it globally. And I think the Biden administration will be supportive in that regard.
Yeah. I've also heard that FDA has been doing remote inspections. Do you have any insight into that?
Yeah, it's been limited kind of case by case, and often includes video. So the receiving site has to conduct video walkthroughs of certain areas, as well as WebEx or Zoom, GoToMeeting, whatever, so they can do interrogations and interviews with the staff members. I have done a couple of remote audits as well with companies, and I've seen kind of from a supplier quality management perspective in the industry that there's been this kind of necessity to do remote audits. And it's not always pretty, but at the same time, you know, all the companies don't want to back end load all this work and have it just start piling up. So I think instead of always just treading water, like having a list of 40 Kappa, let's say at a larger company, instead of letting those just sit there and assume that, well, the FDA is not going to come inspect anytime soon, so we'll get to these later, it's COVID, we'll just say it's because of COVID. I think, you know, that sort of default posture can only serve you for so long. And then you've got to get to the point where you say, you know what, we've got to put a backlog team in place and start getting rid of these deviations in Kappa. And similarly with something like supplier audits, they just have to get done. They exist somewhere on a master audit plan. And yes, the pandemic threw it all into chaos, but there's still a lot of them that need to be completed. And, you know, I think it's not always great for something like a first-time qualification audit because you may never have seen the facility in the past. So getting a virtual walkthrough, you know, the supplier could just show you areas that were the most bright and shiny. You know, not take you into the places where there's cobwebs in the corner and documentation that, you know, isn't as clean or compliant as it should be. So for a first-time qualification audit, I would say not ideal to maybe even not acceptable. But for known suppliers who are on the lower end of the risk spectrum, I think kind of just re-upping the regularity of audits, doing them remotely is pretty sufficient, and it certainly beats just postponing indefinitely.
As we moved toward opening up, I've seen companies take different approaches toward compliance. I've seen some that are taking deviations and Kappa pretty serious, and creating a sense of urgency within the organization. And on the other side of the spectrum, I'm seeing companies that are less urgent and feeling a sense of comfort with the pace of FDA. So what are your thoughts in terms of companies as they look at some of their non-conformances as they move into 2021? Do you think that they should crank up the urgency, or do you think that they can kind of take a medium to longer term approach to addressing non-conformances?
Yeah, I think everybody has kind of gone the way of some sort of COVID kappa, where companies are saying, well, we can just say these weren't all closed on time because it was COVID-19 period. And that only lasts so long. My strong recommendation for all of the backlog of non-conformances is that they start to move toward the top of the list, because the agency is going to be doing their inspections. There certainly will be use of the mutual recognition agreement internationally, but you know, if we want to know what the FDA will focus on, we can get a reasonable calibration by following the money. And the Trump administration fiscal year 2021 budget included a 10% reduction in DHHS, which is interesting, but it had an increase. It's like, it was a pretty marginal increase of like $41 million more than 2020, but it's a $6.2 billion budget target. And some of that is, about half of that is user fees, and then the other 3.4 billion, was looking at the different programs. So, you know, it included medical device coverage, changes to medical devices. It included vaccine, specifically influenza vaccine funding. But, you know, as far as looking at drug companies, looking at compounding, really there's not been a restriction of budget. And in fact, there's, like I said, a marginal increase in budget from past years. And so, you know, the agency is certainly endeavoring to do what it has always done. So even though there's been a bit of a shackle in terms of travel, as we've been talking about, it hasn't really contracted their opportunities for doing inspections. Certainly conducting reviews of submissions hasn't really changed much, because those would all be handled through ECTD, or those are PDF documents being shared between the sponsors and the FDA. So I think if we just look at where the money's going as far as inspections are concerned, they'll be hitting on a lot of the same hot items. And it, you know, maybe mid-2021, but the fact is it's going to start coming back to, you know, what it had been in the past. And so what you don't want to do is have this list of non-conformances that's not been really touched in the last 9 months, and just figure you can continue to presume that COVID-19 will take care of that.
Mm-hmm. What about, what are your thoughts on the regulatory landscape? Because we talked about briefly the Emergency Use Authorization Act and how that's impacted submissions. What do you think early 2020 to late 2021, or I should say early 2021 into late 2021, how do you think that's going to look from a regulatory standpoint?
In terms of what? In terms of like types of therapies or?
No. Prior to the pandemic, I did see that the speed at which, for example, 510K applications were being reviewed and approved seemed to be slower than what I typically saw. And then we saw this influx of PPE, N95, et cetera, applications going in. And, you know, generally I thought even with EUA, things were going to still take a while, because they seem to have already been backlogged. But actually, the reality of what I saw was that these applications were getting reviewed and approved pretty rapidly. So I'm curious to know, what is the EUA going to look like in 2021? And, you know, what are your thoughts in terms of how the FDA is going to be handling some of these incoming applications, whether it's for medical devices or new pharmaceutical products?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think everybody wishes they knew the answer to that. My take is sort of based on non-equilibrium statistics. And I think an analogy is kind of like, how do you know what books on a bookshelf, let's say, are going to be good books until you read them? But somebody has to be first in line to preferentially buy books. So that allows you to have like a New York Times bestseller, because if everybody just bought books on a bookstore shelf with an identical number of copies sold for each type of book, then you'd basically have just a flat rectangular distribution, and there'd be, you know, no difference in a top seller versus the least selling book, because all of the books are going to sell the same number. So, you know, the agency, using that analogy, they kind of have to look through a lot of the applications in order to come up with some kind of conclusions and determine, you know, what it is that they can approve for an EUA versus grant a full approval for, depending on the different channels they come in via. I would say, you know, the first bifurcation, so when something comes into FDA now, the question becomes, is it related to COVID-19? And if it is, whether it's PPE, whether it's a therapy that's within clinical trials for an indication to treat COVID-19 symptoms, or if it's one of the vaccines, those are getting preferential treatment within the agency. And if it's non-COVID-19, so you've got kind of the one direction, which is COVID-19 yes versus COVID-19 no. If it's not related to COVID-19, then it kind of goes down the second path, which is potentially the slower sort of path. You know, in the past, it was looking at review times, and maybe a median review time might have been 220 days. And the question becomes, does that median review time take longer now? It seems like it has been. There's not really been good data with a large enough sample size to say that it has or hasn't, but certainly with, you know, a lot of the FDA's resources being dedicated to answering that first question, things coming in the door, is it for COVID-19? If yes, then we're dedicating activity to that. That obviously is creating bottlenecks, and it's making the reviewer's job and the inspector's job more difficult, because now things are going to pile up and get, you know, a bit backlogged. I think probably, you know, what we'll see is that there will be an uptick in the review period after sort of 2020's data comes through, and then throughout 2021. But, you know, again, having a similar sort of budget to years past, it should be possible to prioritize some of the other reviews and get them back on track. Now, the question becomes, if you've got to do things now to sort of course correct, if something was going to be more on the 300 to 400 days for review time, and you're trying to pull that in, does that mean that it gets a less substantive review? And, you know, that's got to be a question that the FDA would have to justify the answer to, because obviously in the court of public opinion, if there turns out to be a lot of untoward adverse events and serious, let's say, adverse drug reactions to things that didn't have the same level of scrutiny, then the media would love to circle back around and say, well, were all these things rushed to market because there was such a backlog and they had to push through? So I think that's still TBD. Obviously, the work still exists. I mean, at least in the medical device side of things, there were, on average, I think, 12 modified medical devices to be authorized by FDA every day. And in 2019, the FDA gave breakthrough designation to about 100, maybe more than 100 devices, which was twice the number of breakthrough designations in 2018. So, you know, it also begs the question, how do the number of breakthroughs compare in 2020 versus prior years? And also, what about breakthroughs that are being submitted on the back of being COVID-19 therapies or preventive? Because obviously, you know, again, that changes substantially the internal calculus at the agency as far as what they're doing.
Mm. Yeah. You know, it's interesting for me to be in the role that I'm in, because I get insight into a lot of different companies, a lot of different departments, different products, industries, et cetera. And so I have insight into kind of the macro environment, whereas people that are working in industry, in their company, might not be privy to see just because of the day-to-day, right? So, you know, we talked a little bit about inspections, quality, we talked about regulatory. Based off of kind of everything that you're seeing, you know, what do you think is that insight that you have, that gut feeling you have as we move into 2021 that would be useful to share with the audience?
I think in my mind, it's like a few bullet points. One has to do, and of course it depends on who in the audience is in a particular part of this field and industry, but they've ramped up spend or budget for spend as far as AI is concerned. Now, I know at the outset, we kind of talked a little bit about AI and I won't dive deeply into that, but they've got like an additional $8 million for 2021 to invest in workforce and algorithmic capabilities and infrastructure to advance and promote AI that would help the consumer and help the patient. So I think we're going to see a lot more as far as artificial intelligence and machine learning is concerned. I think at the very beginning, so just prior to the pandemic, like January, February 2020, if you remember, we had the drug shortages report from the agency, root cause analysis report. And the FDA had a proposal to require mitigations anytime there was a shortage. And I think one of the things that they're looking at doing now is for organizations that are developing new therapies, they're looking for studies to come into the agency for review and approval that have labeling on them, which includes a basically longest possible expiration date. And so this will allow for things to have a shelf life that is hopefully longer, which means some drug shortages are mitigated. So I think, you know, at the forefront, there's the AI and technology that'll help with clinical trials. It'll help with med tech itself. It'll help on the patient centricity end of things. There's the drug shortages component, which hasn't gone away, but I think there are some ways that we can try to address that. Then the vaccines front, of course, there are over 30 kind of first line vaccines for COVID-19, and there are maybe 11 that are very far along and are kind of jockeying to be some of the first to be released. The FDA also does have a budget item for influenza vaccine technologies. And I think, you know, this current pandemic we have is one of many, and four out of the last five pandemics that we've had have been influenza. So I think there'll be kind of a focus if and when we get COVID-19, you know, our hands wrapped around it and kind of prevented and more or less solved. We need to look ahead to what the next influenza pandemic will look like. How do we prevent it? And then I think finally, precision therapeutics. So it used to be that fewer than a third of approvals were precision therapies, and then that was almost 50%. And I think now out of the 500 plus phase 3 trials of therapies that are going on, probably now more than half, if it keeps trending that way, will be some sort of approval for a precision therapy. And a lot of those are cancer treatments. And that's, again, kind of following along the trends as we've known them. But I would say there's still a lot to be learned. And as Henry Ford said, a market is never saturated with a good product, but it's very quickly saturated with a bad one. So the idea is, you know, going after trends that have been successful has proven to continue to be successful in the industry. And the flip side is, you know, what do you do about those new boundary and frontier pushing treatments like the vaccines coming out, like the use of artificial intelligence and machine learning? So I think, you know, a lot of that is the future of regulatory science, the future of what the agency is looking at and needs to look at, and, you know, where the FDA starts putting its resources and interest becomes those areas within which the industry needs to put its intense focus and resources.
Yeah, I think that might be a really good topic if we were to do another podcast, is to dive a little bit deeper into AI, because I've seen companies come to us with products that are AI. And, you know, some of the things that I've noticed is, how do you define AI is one thing. How does the FDA look at AI, and what are some of their concerns about it? You know, one of the things I say is, you know, being novel is really good in a marketing capacity, but not so much a regulatory capacity, especially if you're talking about, you know, filing for a 510K, you kind of want to be a me too, right? So a lot of these companies are saying, well, I think I can bring my product to market through a 510K, but we're really novel and we've got this cool AI technology, right? So I think the definition of AI, the way the industry is moving toward AI is interesting. How FDA thinks of AI is really interesting. So I think we're kind of on the cusp of that in the life science industry. So that'd be a really neat topic to talk about next time. So,
yeah,
well, Ben, this was awesome. I really appreciate you hopping on. It was a great conversation, and I'd definitely like to have another one with you. So for everybody else that's watched, if you find conversations like this valuable, please share it with a colleague or your professional network. If you haven't already, subscribe to get updates of new episodes at thefda.com/podcast and follow the FDA group on LinkedIn. If you'd like to connect about projects or resource needs, head over to thefdagroup.com to get in touch with us, and feel free to connect with me personally on LinkedIn. So thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks a lot, Ben. And I'll see all of you next time.
Thanks, Nicholas.